think a switch just went off in my head, because I thought that I had failed. I had failed at marriage. I was persuaded to take this job and I was told, yes, you'll be fine. And I had failed at that as well. And I think then you just start to look at yourself and think, I'm crap.
Talking to someone can have an incredibly powerful impact on our mental health. As humans, we're wired for connection, and sharing our thoughts and feelings can help regulate our emotions as well. It can reduce stress, and it can create a sense of belonging when perhaps we might be in a mindset of isolation. When Linda Fisken was struggling with her mental health in 2017, she felt she had no one to talk to. And it led to a downward spiral that drew her to try to take her own life. With the passing of time, Linda has found hope. She has created what she felt wasn't there for her at the time. A safe space for women to talk together about and support each other with their mental health. It's called Linda's Ladies, and we're going to talk about that today. But just before we get underway, please remember, these conversations are often difficult and can be upsetting. They are raw and they are honest. So if you need support, please do press pause and get some help. You'll find all the contact details for both Linda's Ladies and Mikey's Line in the show notes to the podcast. I'm Dan Holland, and this is Speaking of Suicide. Linda, take me back to before 2017. Tell me about life, family, work. Where were you? What was happening?
I had been a stay-at-home mum from about 2008 to 2015. And I think that may be the time that it started to slip. People would kid me on saying, oh yeah, you're a lady who lunches and things. And it really, it wasn't that at all. But I remember thinking, I am really lucky. And I was lucky. However, I think I started to lose my identity. And although, you know, you're a stay-at-home mum, I think I had kind of lost a purpose. And I remember somebody saying that to me one time, and I thought, God, you're right. I don't feel I have a purpose. I then thought, right, the girls are getting up. It's time for me to go back to work. So I volunteered for Giraffe Cafe, who help people that have mental health issues to get back to work. And they put me in a kitchen, which was probably the worst thing ever, because I'm not good in a kitchen. But from there, I got put into a cafe. And I really enjoyed it. And it was only maybe two mornings a week. But I started to get my confidence back. So much so that in 2015, I got a job at St Andrews at the golf, at the links, as a starter, which was just seasonal. But I play golf. And I was very, very nervous. But I loved it. I really, really loved it. And I just got my confidence back. So it was seasonal. So it was from sort of end of March to October time. And met lots of, you know, new friends. Got my confidence back. Then I thought, right, what am I going to do now? So I had sold houses previously, so I registered for a recruitment agency and I started to do some temping work, selling houses. And from that, I was persuaded to take a full-time job. And yes, everything just changed. And then a week before I was there a year, I got the sack. And it was just horrendous.
What else was going on in life at the time?
So unfortunately, my marriage was breaking down. The girls were torn between me and their dad, and it was just really, really difficult. And of course, then when I lost my job, I think that was the catalyst. And I think a switch just went off in my head, because I thought that I had failed, you know. I had failed at marriage. I was persuaded to take this job and I was told, yes, you'll be fine. And I had failed at that as well. And I think then you just start to look at yourself and think, I'm crap, you know. Luckily, one of my colleagues from St Andrews messaged me and said, get your CV back into the links, they're recruiting again. So I got taken back on at St Andrews. But the switch had gone off and I was a completely different person.
In what way were you a different person? Can you describe? Was it your inner thoughts, your emotions?
Yes. I think I just thought I was a failure. And I think it was all the thoughts going on in my head that I thought I was a failure. And I think I just gave up. And it was like, I often say that I could see myself like looking out, you know, standing on St Andrews Beach and looking out at the sea, and I could see myself out there, but I just couldn't reach myself. It was like I was on a cliff and I was, you know, trying to hold on with my fingertips, but I was slipping and slipping and slipping.
That must have been very frightening to be have that sense of losing grip on life.
Yes, yes. It really, really was frightening. And I started to not be able to communicate, which from somebody who was, you know, described as a bubbly blonde, then to just not want to speak to people. I'd just given up on life, and I couldn't. I knew what I wanted to say. I just couldn't get it out. I don't think I could see the point in doing it. It wasn't that I was being bloody minded or anything. It was just, I just couldn't do it. You know, why would you stop speaking, even to your children? You know, I lost friends because they would come and see me, but they didn't know what to say because you would have pleasantries and then there was nothing. Every single day, I could feel this virus engulfing me. It would start in my feet, and then the next day it would go up a few inches on my leg, and then the next day it would go up another few inches on my leg. Then it started in my hands, and I really panicked. I used to think, oh my God, what is this? What has given me this awful, awful tingling feeling and just all over? And I remember trying to explain it to my daughter. People will think it got so bad that I had forgotten about a loaf of bread that was in the bread bin, and it had gone all mouldy. And I remember saying to Rachel, I wonder if it was that's made me feel like that. And Rachel was like, Mum, for goodness sake, you need to speak to the doctor. It was horrendous. It was, you can't even describe it because it sounds so crazy. That's only word. And, you know, if you'd said to somebody, they would think, no, you are crazy. But I think by that time, it had all just snowballed.
I was going to say, sounds to me like it was just a sort of a
yeah.
a spiral that led one thing led to another and led to another.
Yeah.
And then that, as you say, snowballed.
And in between all this, I lost my mum. She passed away in the May. And I used to think that was the other thing. Everywhere I went at work, there was people going off sick the day after they had been near me. And one of the main parts of St Andrews I was working in, there was an office behind, and all, you know, one of the ladies was off really quite ill. And I got it into my head that it was me that had made her ill. And every, you know, it was like so-and-so was going off sick and so-and-so was going off sick. And I thought, oh my God, I saw them yesterday. It must be me. My head was just, it really was awful. And I remember even thinking, oh my God, my mum passed away. What if that was me? I didn't want to come and see my dad because I thought, oh my God, if I infected my dad, what if I lost my dad? I mean, it does sound absolutely insane, but never ever underestimate the power of the mind. Not only was it awful for me, it must have been horrendous for my family as well. How could I say what was going on in my head, because it sounds crazy and nobody would believe me? But it was real to me. I just thought, oh my God, are the girls getting meningitis, or, you know, all these rashes? And anytime somebody's around me, it's all me. But nobody would have believed me. And the crux of the suicide was Rosie. She had another rash or something, and she was complaining of a sore head. And I think I had gone through to her room and put the light on. She was like, oh, Mum, that light's, oh, it's too bright. And I convinced myself that I had given my daughter meningitis. And that was the you know, it was like, oh my God, I'm such a bad mother. And I suppose it was the failure again. It was the failing in the marriage, failing at my job, and then failing as a mother. It does. I'm sorry. It does all sound crazy, but it was real to me.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Just, you know. I think I was in an absolute mental turmoil. Absolute mental turmoil. I was just, it really was the most horrendous, horrendous time of my life, and I wouldn't want anybody to go through that at all. I'd planned my suicide attempt for quite a few weeks and months, because life was getting worse every day. I remember waking up and thinking, oh no, not another day. Oh, please no. And I would will myself to get back to sleep, because that was the only way you got peace from it all. It was more the how I was going to end my life, because I didn't want an impact on other people, but yet it was my daughters that found me. It's very difficult to try and start to rebuild your house, rebuild your life, mm-hmm. in a psychiatric hospital, they are, for me, they're such scary, scary places. You know, you go into these places and you're in a dorm or a room with 3, 4, 5 other ladies with varying different mental health conditions. Scary, scary places, scary places. And of course, because I wasn't communicating, I used to just say, you know, hi, my name's Linda, but I don't speak. I could say that, but, you know.
So you'd become almost nonverbal.
Yeah.
Was it more of a case of just, do you think, stopping you trying to take your life another time or again? Or was it actually a healthcare service that was on its knees, trying to support you the best they could?
Yes, yes. I mean, you saw the doctor or the psychiatrist once a week. So you saw him on a Monday, and then the nurses were there to kind of look after you the rest of the time. I hate to say it, there's quite a few of these nurses that should not have been in the job, because it's like they got a kick out of seeing you miserable. I mean, I didn't know what rumination meant, but I would sit and I would get myself into a frenzy, and I would think, right, okay, I'm okay, but I would, you know, the mind would snowball again, something small, you know, I would catastrophise everything, and you'd eventually pluck up the courage to go and ask for, it was a little blue tablet back in the day, was it lorazepam or whatever, and you would ask if you could get a lorazepam. No, no, you're fine, away you go and colour in. What good does that do?
Yeah.
You know, you'd spent a couple hours trying to pluck up the courage, and then you were just dismissed like that.
How did your, I was going to say release, but discharge come from the psychiatric hospital?
This is very, very strange. So a friend had come to see me and took me out for coffee. Something happened. I remember trying to sort out my dad's electricity. I remember that. And something in my head must have said, oh, you've done something right. You've managed to do that. And then the communication started again. And she took me to Tesco's in Dundee. And oh my goodness me, I was speaking to everybody. I was speaking to everybody. It was almost very, very strange.
What did that feel like, though, to have that?
Oh, it was
back?
Just wonderful. I remember phoning my dad, and it was like, Dad, I can speak. You know, I was on the phone. That was a Friday. And then I remember waking up on a Saturday morning and I'd gone again. Wasn't able to communicate again. And my brother brought my dad on the Saturday. And I remember just being in such a state. I was crying my eyes out because the speech had gone again.
Let's take a big jump forward in time and talk about Linda's Ladies. Tell me about what was the inspiration? What drove you to want to set the group up? And then tell us a bit about the group.
So I think for the 15 weeks I was in Strathaven latterly, gave me a lot of time to think about things. You know, think about what I had done, why I had done what I'd done. And basically, I didn't want anybody else to end up in a psychiatric hospital because it was so distressing. And I'd suppose I didn't want anybody else to have gone through what I had gone through in 2017, because, you know, I've had electric shock treatment in the past. I've been in Moray Royal, I've been in Strathaven twice. They are not nice places. And I just thought, I just don't want anybody else to go through what I went through, because if it could happen to me, it could happen to anybody, you know? I mean, to the outside world, I had a good upbringing. I got married. You know, I was the quintessential family with the gorgeous husband, good job, two cars in the drive, lovely house, two children. We just didn't have the dog. You know, so to the outside world, everything was rosy. But, oh, my goodness me. Yeah, if it could happen to me, it could happen to anybody. And I knew Andy's Man's Club were in Perth. And when I came out of Strathaven, I moved back to Perth, and I moved back in with my dad. So I was then transferred from Fife to Tayside. And my first appointment at Tayside, I was told, you're not ill enough to be seen by us. And I thought, why am I not ill enough? So it was like, right, well, you know, who am I going to talk to? Oh, well, you know. You know, they give you the Samaritan's number and whatnot, but the Samaritans can only listen. They can't give advice. And I think that's when we, you know, the lady talked and said, what we need is a female's Andy's Man's Club. And I thought, all right, okay. So that's kind of where it stemmed from.
You're based in Perth.
Mm-hmm.
Were you surprised by the response to setting the group up? Or did you realise quite quickly it was a reality that here were a huge number of women of all ages, mm-hmm. of all backgrounds, who were struggling with their mental health?
Mm-hmm. So, the group's taken a long time. I mean, we used to meet weekly pre-COVID, and the numbers were getting more and more and more. But I think having a safe space where you're not judged. I remember quite a few ladies coming to the group and saying, oh, I'm so glad I did, because you haven't judged me.
And that's so important, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because
yeah.
Your feelings, your emotions
mm-hmm.
suddenly become validated.
Yes.
Somebody says they're real.
Yes. That's scary.
It's not like you're, mm-hmm. Some of the experiences you've described.
Mm-hmm.
It's an acknowledgement of, yes,
mm-hmm.
they're real, and mm-hmm. we're here to listen and support.
Yeah, yeah. And I think by sharing, you don't then feel so alone, because what you've maybe gone through, somebody else has gone through. And I kind of run the group by the I mean, it's not religious in any way, but it's a wee bit like the Serenity Prayer. You can't change other people, but you can change you and how you deal with others. Because an awful lot of what I was hearing was down to other people, you know, other people saying something. But yeah. I would then look at the yeah. other person and say, well, you don't know what's going on in their life.
World. Yeah.
And obviously, you know, some people don't understand mental health, you know. And some people say things and they probably don't think about it, but they don't realise the impact it has on the person
on
they're saying
people.
It to. Yeah. And then there's so much overthinking, you know, dwelling on the past, you know, and I mean, to be honest, it's an awful lot of what my ex-husband said to me, you know, the past can't be changed, move on. And I wasn't able to do that then, whereas now, that's how I've trained myself, I suppose.
But how do you help people start to build their own toolkit of resilience or their own training to find their way in such a way you have? Or is it just to create a very safe, open space where anybody can talk to anybody or raise anything?
Mm-hmm. A bit of both, I would say. You know, I've met ladies on a one-to-one basis where they're really struggling, and it's just talking things through and maybe dissecting it a bit and almost getting them to take a step back and look at the situation from the outside, and that it's not an awful lot of it isn't them, it's other people. And I think just then getting a perspective, change is scary. And change is very scary. And it was, you know, it was for me. But I have now got to the other side. And it's being able to take the steps that you need to change your situation. You know, I've got ladies who are in possibly abusive relationships, but leaving it is very, very scary, and they're almost taking a step into the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus, you know, you're in a relationship for a long, long time, and that then becomes kind of normalised. And it's not until you're on the other side that you can see how bad it was. But it's taken that step. And I suppose when you're used to being the way you are for so long, change is very scary. I was looking for everybody else to fix me. You know, if you couldn't fix me, I would go to the next person. If they couldn't fix me, they were dumped, and I would go to the next person. But the only person that can fix you is you. You know, I talk to myself constantly. You know, I try and flip the negatives into positives. And if you listen to people as a culture, my God, we're so negative. You know, we're a culture of moaners.
You're smiling, Linda. We'll come on in just a second. We'll come and talk about how you manage your mental health today, 8 years on. But if you're listening to this and you're in and around Perth and you want to get in touch with Linda about Linda's Ladies, then just search them up on Facebook. All of the details are there. And if you're further afield and you need someone to talk to, then you can text Mikey's line on 07786 207755, or you can contact them on Messenger, web chat and WhatsApp. And the number for WhatsApp is 01463 729 000. And all the details for Linda's Ladies and Mikey's Line are in the show notes to this podcast. You were smiling and laughing just then, Linda. How is your mental health today?
Oh, well, it's a heck of a lot better than it was. As a youngster, I was a worrier. I was always a worrier. And I suppose it's just from moving back to Perth. I've looked at my life. I've looked at why I was who I was. I've looked at my marriage. And I've accepted why it all happened, and I've kind of pieced the jigsaw together. I just look at situations. I don't dwell on them. I use the Banksy photo of the girl with the red balloon.
Yeah.
And if I get unhelpful thoughts, or if I start straying back to the past, I force myself, I'll put my hand up and I'll push the thoughts away, because I'm in control of my mind. My mind's not in control of me, which it was before. So I won't swear, but I'll tell the thoughts to go away.
To leave you alone.
To leave me alone, yeah. Yes. And I'll visualise me putting the thoughts into the red balloon, and the red balloon going up into the sky. I've taught myself that dwelling on the past serves no purpose.
It sounds to me, though, like you perhaps have an awful lot more self-awareness now than you did during those difficult years leading up to 2017 and immediately after. You've almost sort of built a toolbox.
Yes.
To help you.
Yep.
One of the things you often say to people is you can't fix them, but you can be there to try and support them.
Mm-hmm.
How much does that honesty and having that toolbox and the non-judgmental environment we talked about earlier on help other women open up?
That's why I'm a great advocate for lived experience. You can have all the qualifications under the sun, but unless you felt it, unless you've been there, how on earth can you understand it? So with my group, you know, I try and find, you know, we find out about, you know, their background, you know, the problems that they have. And, you know, we kind of get each other. So, yes, it's lovely. It's, I don't know. You know, people say, oh, you're an inspiration. And I think, well, how can I be an inspiration? I don't get that. I just don't want people to, you know, ladies to go through what I did. And looking back at all what I've said, I thought, my God, I sound crazy. But you know, if it was real to me, it was so real. And now I look back and it was like it was another life. God, did that really happen? You know? So, yes, I mean, I do still struggle with my mental health. But, oh boy, not on a daily basis. Thank goodness.
Linda, thank you so much for your honesty and your trust in talking to me today.
Thank you.
I was talking to Linda Fiskin, the founder of Linda's Ladies in Perth. There's a link to Linda's Ladies in the show notes, the podcast. And now here's Shona from Mikey's Line with a few thoughts to take away from our conversation today.
Really good to hear Linda. And what I'm so struck by from her account is how convincing our minds can become when we're unwell, how our thoughts can feel so true to us. And Linda was sharing very painful thoughts that she was having, that she was harming others, that she'd failed as a wife or as a mother or as a person, and that they felt so real to her that it was devastating. And in mental health crises, this is often what happens, that something can shift from this bad thing happened to I'm the problem, there's something wrong with me, and there's something wrong with who I am. And that causes such deep isolation. And Linda described herself as a bubbly person and someone that loved connection and conversation. And this experience, that it resulted in her literally losing her voice, her ability to speak and to have that conversation. The very thing that can be helpful became too hard. And again, the power of what she's created, that the thing that she couldn't access or find, she has created through Linda's Ladies, a space that she wished she'd had, where women can come together and to talk and to be real and to realise that they're not alone. Mental health, it can be so powerfully isolating, as Linda's described, but the connection that we can also find has the power to bring us back to ourselves. So thank you so much to Linda for sharing her story.
A huge thanks to Shona and all the team at Mikey's Line for the work they do. And don't forget, if you need someone to talk to or some help, then you can text Mikey's Line on 077 86 20 77 55, or contact them via Messenger, web chat and WhatsApp, and that WhatsApp number is 01 463 729 000. And all those details and links are in the show notes, along with the link for Linda's Ladies. Speaking of suicide, is funded by Mikey's Line, and the platform is sponsored by Highland-based family firm D&D Paving Limited. If you'd like to sponsor an episode, do get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. And Speaking of Suicide is produced by Adventurous Audio.